We're going to look at Dayenu today. And unlike other places in the Haggadah, Dayenu takes us to other conclusions and other outcomes. And we'll also be able to look at just the structure of the word Dayenu. Like, where does that come from? Sounds very un-Jewish. Oh, that would have been enough. Maybe it's very, very Jewish. Oh, that would have been fine if you had just, you know, took us in the middle of the sea, but not let us across to the other side. If you had took us to Mount Sinai, but not given us the Torah, it would have been fine. So we'll look at some, you know, some other uses of the word Dayenu, just to get a sense of that. Even a sort of alternative universe, opposite Dayenu, and think about the ways in which the Egyptians were actually saying, wouldn't it have been enough if you had just done X, but you had to go and do X, Y, and Z? Just to remind us, the Mishnah that we've been looking at sort of throughout in this series comes back again. Ulufi dato shel ben aviv milamdo, according to the knowledge of the, or the ability of the child, the parent instructs him. Marchil b'gnudim misayim b'shevach v'doresh me'arami oved avi ad she'igmor kol ha'parasha kula. So again, we had this question last week of, does moving from gnut to shevach mean the same as do a doresh, do a drasha of the section of Arami Oved Avi in Deuteronomy until you finish that whole section? Or are they two distinct issues? One is go from gnut to shevach, from degradation. David wants another word from, you know, the opposite of praise, from lowliness to heights. That's one journey, which is totally separate from the drasha of Arami Oved Avi, from the my father was a wandering Aramean or an Aramean tried to destroy my father. Two separate things, or one where the example of going from degradation, from gnut to shevach, is the story of Arami Oved Avi? And if you do think that they are one, then the question is, what happens at the end of that parasha? Where do you finish that story of moving towards praise? And again, that's where Dayenu is going to give us a commentary of where it thinks the end of the journey is, which is different from some of the other ones that we're familiar with in the Haggadah. So just again, to remind you, the Talmud actually does not equate the journey from Gnut to Shevach with the section of Arami Oved Avi. It has its own answer of what the Gnut is and what the Shevach is. So this is box number two. What is Gnut? My big Gnut. Rav says, Mitchila. From the beginning, that is to say, from the beginning, our ancestors were idol worshippers. And Shmuel, or in the printed text, but Rava really in all the manuscripts says, no, it's Abadim Ayinu. That's the beginning of our Gnut. Okay, but neither of them actually explicitly says what the Shevach is. Meaning that the Talmud asks, what is degradation? What is lowliness? And it gets two answers. One is idol worship even before Egypt. And the second is we were slaves in Egypt. Neither of them, we do not have a parallel question of my sheva. What's the praise that we're headed to? Now, maybe that's because it's obvious, like the obvious opposite of being an idol worshiper is to, you know, believe in the one God, or the obvious opposite of being slaves is to be free. But just to note, we didn't spell it out exactly. And we remember also that we saw in the Yerushalmi, there was this alternative vision of what Rav was saying when Rav said, in the beginning, katchila, ve'ever hanar yashvu avotechem. In the beginning, we lived over on the other side of the river. And v'akachet avichem et Abraham ve'ever hanar. And I took your father, Abraham, from across the river, from Aram Naharaim to the other side. So it's possible there you do have the Shevach, where the Shevach is, you made it to the other side. And again, this was the strange possibility that maybe the whole story of Gnut to Shevach finished even before we got to Egypt. Maybe the whole thing was simply the journey of Abraham, who moves from being an idol worshiper to moving to the other side of the river, but in a sort of ideological sense as well as a geographic sense. And that's one possibility. Maybe that's wrapped up in Rav's version in the Babylonian Talmud. In the beginning, we were idol worshippers, which is the same as in the beginning, we lived on the other side of the river. Okay, this is the Gnut that we're playing around with in the Talmudim. But now we have Dayenu, which is giving us its own version of moving from Gnut to Sheva. And there are, of course, two. Dayenu is really two poems that are knocked into one mush. And we think of it as one, but in fact, it seems like it was two. And scholars actually think the second part came earlier. So Dayenu begins, and Dayenu is, this is said at the end of the drasha, in the Magid section. So we're toward the end of the Magid section after we mentioned the plagues. Kama ma'alot tavot lamakom aleinu. How many ma'alot, how many degrees, let's say, or great acts, as it's translated, one Haggadah, this is the Shechter Haggadah, how many great acts has God, makom, has the place done for us? Kama ma'alot tavot lamakom aleinu. Which is a little bit of a strange sentence. Now, ma'alot may also have some other associations that you're thinking of. When you think of the word ma'alot, what might come to mind? So we have shira ma'alot, right? Which is what we say on Shabbat and holidays before Birkat HaMazon, that psalm. These are the psalms. There are actually 15 psalms that begin shir ha-ma'alot. I think it's 120 to 134 that are in fact related to Dayenu, because how many stanzas of Dayenu are there? Well, there are 14 stanzas, but 15 stages, okay? Because you got two in the first one. So Ilu Hotzianu Mimitzrayim Velo Asa Bahem Shvatim, that's two things. And if you run through all of Dayenu, if you count all the things that were that God did for us, Kama Ma'alot Tovot, you actually get 15 Ma'alot Tovot, which is parallel to the 15 Shirei HaMa'alot, the 15 songs of ascent, which themselves are parallel to a few other things, which we're going to see in a second. But let's just look at what the 15 things are. In order to do that, I'm going to scroll to the bottom of Dayenu. You know, if you're like I grew up in my Seder, probably we'll do it again in our new Seder at home. We just sang a few of these verses. Ilu Hotzi Hotzianu, Hotzianu Mi Mitzrayim. We used to do Ilu Natan Lanu Et HaShabbat, Ilu Natan Lanu Et HaTorah. That was it. It was like the highlights. Nobody can disagree with those. We didn't dwell too much on the, you know, the destruction ones, but indeed they're all there. And as a just as a poem, it kind of only makes sense if you read them all through. So this is the second part of Dayenu, which I'm taking us to the end of Dayenu. After you run through all the Dayenu, it would have been enough if we had stopped somewhere in the middle of the 15 Ma'alot. Here we're going to go a little bit further and say, no, actually, how amazing it was you did them all. Alachad kama v'chama. How much the more so, all this doubled and redoubled goodness that God did for us. And now we get the list just straight up so you can read it very clearly. Hotzianu mi Mitzrayim, took us out of Egypt, carried out judgments against them, Shvatim, which is mentioned in the book of Exodus. Asadim be'elohehem, did judgment against their idols. Haragat b'choreim, smote their firstborn. Natan lanu et mamonam, gave us their wealth. Karalanu et hayam, split the sea for us. Ve'evireinu b'tocho b'charava, took us to the other side on dry land. Drowned our oppressors in it, supplied our needs in the desert for 40 years. Fed us the manna, gave us Shabbat. Brought us. Notice Shabbat comes before Har Sinai. That's true according to one view, and probably explicitly, Shabbat is mentioned around Man, which is before they get to Sinai. Then they came to Mount Sinai, gave us the Torah, brought us to the land of Israel. Ichnisanu la'aretz Yisrael, uvana lanu et beit ha-bechira, and built for us the beit ha-bechira, the chosen house, the temple. Okay, what's the final line? L'chaper al kol avonoteinu. To atone for all of our sins. So just to note that this is the Shevach that we arrive at in Dayenu. We said last week that the potential Shevach, if you're really reading Arami Oved Avi to the end of the Parashah Kula, it's that God brought us into this land and gave us all this food that we are now bringing before God. But this is actually a different version of what it means to come into the land. Come into the land where God will build the temple for us. We will have that house of worship. The presence of God will be on earth. And the purpose of that Beit HaBechira is to lechaper al kol avonotenu, to atone for our sins. Now, I mentioned yesterday, those of you with us in the Yom Iyun, that you don't think of Pesach and Yom Kippur as aligned, but there are little hints. One is that we wear the kittel on Seder night, and we wear it also only the other time on and Yom Kippur. And here also you see that the highlight, the pinnacle, the where are we going, what's this journey all headed to, is lichaper al kol avonoteinu. It's actually meant to give us the opportunity to atone for our sins. Now, what's striking and sort of depressing is we are not in the land. You know, again, if you're sitting in Babylonia, you know, in the writing of the Babylonian Talmud, you're not in the land. And you certainly, nobody has access to the temple. And so how are we doing kapara for all of our sins? So that's sort of like the challenge of rabbinic Judaism generally. But just to note that this is where Dayenu thinks we're all headed. By the way, this is why some scholars earlier in the 20th century believed Dayenu to be one of the oldest poems of the Haggadah, because it seems like it was said in a time when the temple was standing. Although later scholars, as is, it seems to be the trend, say, no, actually, the fact that Dayenu doesn't appear in any Eretz Yisrael Haggadah and the fact that none of it appears in rabbinic literature means that, yes, they were longing for the temple, but it itself is a poetic creation that follows much later than temple times. I'll give you some other evidence about why Dayenu might be old, but that's that doesn't seem to be scholarly consensus right now, that Dayenu somehow entered the Haggadah, like a bunch of songs and poems that we say. And in fact, Dayenu, if you take it seriously, doesn't even have to really be only about Seder night. In fact, it's just sort of a telling of the history of the Jewish people, and that we recite in other forms at other times, and nobody bats an eye that it's not Pesach when we're reciting them. So I'll give you a couple of examples of that. We say Psalm 136, actually the structure of Psalm 135 on Psalm 136 is very similar to the structure of Dayenu, which is a poem where it lists out each one with a refrain, Dayenu, and then it's followed by the sort of narrative telling of moving one to the other to the other. That's the same thing in reverse of Psalm 135, 136. So just notice in Psalm 136, which we say, nowadays we say it every Shabbat as part of Sukkot and Zimra. We also will say this Hallel HaGadol. There's a debate about what the Hallel is that you're supposed to say at the end of the Seder. And this is one of them. Hallel HaGadol, maybe this is the Hallel that we're supposed to say as opposed to Psalms 113 to 118. So this is in fact, you know, intimately related to Seder night, because it is, at least one opinion in the Gemara, the Hallel that we're supposed to say, called Hallel HaGadol, as opposed to Hallel HaMitzri, the Egyptian Hallel, which is the one that starts, that includes B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, Psalm 113 to 118. Maybe Hallel was just Psalm 136, and just look at the structure. L'makei Mitzrayim b'vchoreim, ki le'olam chasto. Vayotzei Yisrael mitocham, ki le'olam chasto. B'yad chazakah v'zroa netuya. You can see the translation here. So this is, again, a process of leaving Egypt with a refrain. And the refrain itself might be abbreviated, because what is Kile Olam Chasto really short for? Hodu L'Adonai Ki Tov, Kile Olam Chasto. Right? So you could imagine a real liturgical performance of this psalm, just like Dayenu is a rousing part of our Seder, and everybody can get into singing it. And sort of, at least with the refrain Dayenu, you could imagine this with Kile Olam Chasto. And we have here the story of the Jewish people as told through Psalm 136. Now, each of these, Dayenu and Psalm 136, are actually missing certain parts of our history. What's super striking about Psalm 136 is, what's the main thing that's missing in Psalm 136? Actually, they never seem to really get to Har Sinai. They just move through the desert. God slaughters Melachim Adirim, who then they name Sichon Melech Amori and Og Melech HaBashan. Those kings that prevented Israel from crossing their lands and went out to meet them in war, God defeated them. And then what happened? Natan Artzam LeNachala, Nachala LeYisrael Avdo. Right? So we got their land in return. That actually isn't in Dayenu, but what's missing in Psalm 136 is, brought us to Mount Sinai and gave us the Torah. So that's kind of striking, just if you think about Psalm 136, about Hallel HaGadol, it's missing that piece, which is interesting and does show up in Dayenu. But just note, the structure of Psalm 136, again, we're going to recite that in the full Haggadah as one of the versions of Hallel towards the end, is very similar to Dayenu. And indeed, if you look at Psalm 135, the psalm that precedes it, we don't recite that on Seder night. We say exactly these things, but without the refrain. Sheikha b'chore Mitzrayim, Shalach ototu moftim b'tochei Mitzrayim, b'faro b'chol avadav, b'ka goyim rabim, harag melachim atzumim, sichon melach amuri, og melach habashan. You have all these things without the refrain. So you can see actually that perhaps Dayenu is in fact just mimicking Halel HaGadol and its relationship to the Psalm that comes before it, Psalm 135 plus Psalm 136, is like Dayenu, where you get the, each level has a response, Dayenu, that's the Kilo Lam Kasto parallel, and then you get the summary and sort of the list form of all the wonderful things that happened to us. Okay, just to note that the Shir HaMa'alot, the Psalms 120 to 134, these 15 Ma'alot, these 15 levels that we say that encompass the book of Psalms, were actually, according to the Mishnah, also parallel to the 15 steps that the Levi'im would sing on as they were rising up from the mixed court to the inner court of the temple. And this shows up in the in a couple of Mishnayot, Mishnah Midot, the 15 steps, Chamesh Asrei Ma'alot, that's again the Kama Ma'alot Tovot, the 15 steps that went up from the Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael, or corresponding to the 15 psalms that the Levi'im would sing. And the picture of these steps, these were curved steps, that was sort of, you look at the temple diagrams as they've been reconstructed from this Mishnah. So there's something about literally you're going up in each of these. The journey from degradation to praise is actually a physical journey in which you're literally climbing up steps, okay? All right, so and one medieval commentary on the on Dayenu just makes the explicit the connection between the end of the Arami Oved Avi section in the Torah that we do not expound on in the Haggadah. We do not get to the line where it says that God brought us to this place, but this commentator, Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, says that actually this is the purpose of Dayenu. That itself, Dayenu, is the exposition of the last verse that we cut off from Arami Oved Avi in Deuteronomy, and that is actually the bringing us to the place, Vayivyenu al-Makom Hazeh, bringing us to this place, that last part of the Deuteronomy verse, is what Dayenu is doing in the Seder. It's the commentary we were missing on that verse that we were missing. It's the sort of return of the repressed of, actually, this is a journey to a land as opposed to a journey to freedom. Okay, so the Bavel mentality, the exilic mentality, is one in which you were slaves and now you're free, right? That's the Rava Shmuel opinion. But actually here we have Dayenu, which is telling us actually you were slaves and then you entered into the land. And not only the land, but you got into the temple for your atonement. Okay, so let's get to the Dayenu. What could Dayenu mean? Skipping some other biblical texts about the raised platforms. Oh, this is interesting. There was a scholarly argument that said that Dayenu was a reaction to a anti-Semitic Easter sermon that was offered by a early Christian preacher, church father named Melito of Sardis, which is in Western Turkey. This is a sermon that was already from the second century, so pretty old. So people who think Dayenu is old, this is in your favor. And this is the way that that the Christian preacher sort of does the anti-Dayenu, the one that we're probably familiar with, right? Israel the ungrateful. How much did you value the 10 plagues? How much did you value the mighty pillar and the daily cloud and the crossing of the Red Sea? How much did you value the giving of the manna from heaven and the supply of water from a rock and the giving of Torah at Horeb and the inheritance of the land? That is to say, you're totally ungrateful. And that actually rings true with the Israel of the Bible. In other words, that you could read it as an anti-Semitic trope. You could also just read it as a straight-up reading of Bnei Israel in the Torah, who were just fundamentally ungrateful throughout all the miracles that took place for them there. And so whether this is an internal critique of Israel, sort of we are all Israel, or whether it's directed against Jews, we could explore further. But just note that you could see Dayenu as a reaction to this. But this is not only didn't take a Christian preacher to notice that Israelites were not grateful during the desert. We have other examples of this. We have sinned like our forefathers. We have gone astray, done evil. Our forefathers in Egypt did not perceive your wonders. They did not remember your abundant love, but rebelled at the sea of reeds. He saved them as befits his name to make known his might. He sent his blast against the sea of reeds. It became dry. He led them through the deep as through wilderness. He delivered them from the foe, redeemed them from the enemy. Water covered their advances. Not one of them was left. They believed his promise, sang his praises, but they soon forgot his deeds. They were quick to forget his deeds, and they would not wait to learn his plan. That is to say, maybe we were temporarily grateful, but we actually didn't really hold on to that gratitude, even all the things that God did for us. So that was, again, that's just Psalm 106. So there's a view of Israel as the ungrateful that you can find in Christian literature, but also just in the Bible, and seems to speak truth to what was the experience in the desert. So maybe Dayenu is a tikkun, or maybe the avon, the sin that we're being atoning for is the sin of ungratefulness. And Dayenu is an expression of, we are grateful at every step of the way. We're not going to second guess the good deeds that God did for us in the desert. Okay, so I want to look now at Harvey's question. What does Dayenu mean? So I think Dayenu, you know, it would have been enough. I think that is a reasonable translation. It's almost always the translation you see in English. But just to see that there are some other associations with Dayenu. One is on this phrase that you see in Malachi, I will surely open the floodgates of the sky for you and pour down blessings on you, ad bli dai. Barikoti lachem bracha, ad bli dai. Until without ending, okay, which sounds like a positive thing. You'll get so many blessings. So the Yerushalmi asks, Ma'o ad bli dai? What does that phrase mean? Rabbi Yossi bar Shimon bar Ba, b'shem Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, it's davar she'iaf sharlo lomar dai hu bracha. Something which you cannot ever say enough about, that is a blessing. Okay, so dai... Ad bli dai is like, I can never stop talking about how amazing this is. Okay, and Rabbi Brechia, Rabbi Chalva, Rav Abba, Bar Eli, B'Shem Rav, and you have another tradition, Rav's name, Ad sheyivlu siftotechem milomar dayenu. What does it mean, ad bli dai? You're saying over and over again, dayenu. Right? We have so much blessing that your lips are worn out, as is the way that we say this song. We say it over and over again, Dayenu. It's just, it's amazing. Okay? Dayenu brachot, Dayenu brachot. Enough for us blessings. Like, we have so much blessings. We're filled with blessings. So I think you can read it as literally it would have been enough, or it's like, wow, I'm overwhelmed with blessing. Dayenu, not as like, it would have been enough, like literally, but like, man, there's so many blessings here. I'm overwhelmed with blessings. Dayenu brachot, Dayenu brachot. There's so much that I can say it. I'm going to say it over and over again, how much blessings we have. That's just another way of looking at it, as opposed to literally, it would have been enough if you had just stopped halfway because of the way Dayenu is used in other contexts. I'm just going to bring you the flip side of Dayenu as a way of ending, which is the way the Egyptians actually would have experienced Dayenu. Amru, it's an early midrash on Shemot, Amru. Ilu lakinu velo shalachnu kedai hulanu. If we had been plagued without setting them free, without letting the Israelites go, kedai hulanu, like dayenu, that would have been enough for us, right? If you had just given us the plagues but not set them free. Ilu lakinu v'shalachnu. No, even if you had plagued us and set them free. Ilu lakinu v'shalachnu velo hayu notlinu mamonenu kedai hulanu. Wouldn't have been enough if you had just plagued us and let them free and not had them take our money. That would have been enough for us. But the fact that we actually had all of them, the straw that breaks the camel's back for Pharaoh, Kivan shara paro shayatu Israel amar, lo dayenu lirdof acharei Israel, ele bishvil kesaf bizahav shelakhu mimenu. It wouldn't have been enough for us to go after Israel, except for the fact that they took our money. Like the last thing that we needed was them taking our money, which the Jews think is sort of back pay, but the Egyptians see as stealing. And so that's the sort of dayenu from the opposite side. Wouldn't it have been enough if you had just done what you had done up until a certain point, but you had to go further and further? So just offering that as another possible vision of what dayenu could mean, which is to say, there's the dayenu for us. We're so filled with blessing. We can't stop speaking. It's like our lips are worn out from saying so many blessings, so many blessings. Dayenu is like, dayenu brachot, so many blessings. And for the Egyptians, it's like, wouldn't it have been enough? Couldn't you have stopped here instead of going on and on and on? Sort of the flip side of dayenu. So I'm offering Dayenu as a possible, another version of Genut to Shevach, where what it means to go from degradation to praise, actually arriving in the land of Israel to have the temple, to atone for our sins. Maybe the sin was being ungrateful, and the possibility of Dayenu itself as a tikkun, as a repair, by being overcome with gratitude, saying over and over again, Dayenu brachot, Dayenu brachot.